Hi, I'm John Trader with Entusys Healthcare Solutions, and welcome to the next installment of our podcast series where we interview industry professionals for information, analysis, and opinions on the biggest issues that face the healthcare industry. Duplicate medical records and overlays continue to be two pressing issues for the healthcare industry as we usher in the age of electronic medical records, health information exchanges, integrated delivery networks, and enterprise master patient indexes. Although these two issues can seriously jeopardize patient safety, increase the likelihood of unnecessary treatments and a misdiagnosis, raise the cost of care, and have a detrimental effect on the revenue cycle for medical facilities, they are different in size and scope, and until only recently, have not been getting the attention they deserve from C-level executives. We decided to learn more about what duplicate medical records and overlays are and had the opportunity to speak with Beth Just, President and CEO of Just Associates, a Colorado-based company that provides healthcare organizations with customized solutions that improve health data quality and result in enhanced revenue cycle efficiency, increased patient and clinician satisfaction, and improved patient care. We asked Beth to define what duplicate medical records and overlays are, their implications, how they are particularly troublesome for and dangerous for children's hospitals, what the real duplicate rates are at medical facilities versus what they report, the impact of these issues on revenue and the billing cycle, how duplicates and overlays affect data integrity and the effectiveness of health information exchanges, the amount of time needed to clean a database following the discovery of a duplicate or overlay, and what technologies are available to help stop duplicates and overlays from happening. The following is a recording of our conversation with Beth Just on the topic of duplicate medical records and overlays in healthcare.
Hi, this is John Trader with Entusys Technology, and welcome to another installment in our Entusys Healthcare Solutions podcast series, where we chat with healthcare industry professionals on a variety of topics in healthcare and healthcare IT. I'm happy to announce that we have Beth Just from Just Associates with us today. And Beth is founder and CEO of Just Associates, a healthcare data integration consulting firm focused on data integrity, data migration, and health information exchange. She served as president of the Colorado Health Information Management Association, also known as CHIMA, C-H-I-M-A, and on numerous CHIMA and American Health Information Management Association committees and work groups. She served on the board of directors for AHIMA from 2009 to 2011 and is currently on the board of trustees for the College of St. Scholastica. She is also a voluntary enterprise master patient index consultant to the Colorado RIO and Colorado Telehealth Network. And her articles have been published in Executive Insight, the Journal of AHIMA, For the Record, Healthcare IT News, HFMA, and Advance. She is recognized as an industry expert in the areas of patient identity data quality and the electronic linking of patient records. A little bit of information about Just Associates, where Beth is president and CEO. Just Associates provides healthcare organizations with customized solutions that improve health data quality and result in enhanced revenue cycle efficiency, increased patient and clinician satisfaction, and improved care. They also provide expert services in every aspect of health data quality from initial assessments, data analysis, and full-scale MPI cleanups, which identify and eliminate duplicate MPI records and their causes, to patient access consulting, outsourced MPI management, and software solutions that help prevent the creation of new duplicate medical records and optimize workflow processes to manage resolution. Just Associates' core competencies include health information management, project management, data technology management, and data migration. Their services and products help their clients maximize the benefits of their health information technology investment, which is so important. Their clients represent both urban and rural healthcare markets and range from small community hospitals to large integrated health systems and health information exchanges. They also consult with health information technology vendors in need of their data integrity expertise. You can find Just Associates on the web at www.justassociates, that's JustAssociates.com. Beth, welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, John, for inviting me. I'm privilege to do this with you.
Great. Let's start with our first question, and it has to do with overlays in healthcare. Can you explain to us what overlays in healthcare are and how they are different than duplicate medical records?
Sure. Overlays occur when two different people's or patients' information end up in one medical record. So you get two persons sharing one medical record. A duplicate medical record occurs when one patient is assigned more than one unique medical record number, which then creates more than one medical record for that patient.
Okay. What are some of the implications of overlays and duplicate medical records, and why do they pose such a problem and a threat to patient safety?
Well, there are several issues that typically occur when overlaid or duplicate medical records exist. With duplicate records, the patient is treated with incomplete information, and that missing information may be just the piece of information that the clinician needs to provide quality care. So here's an example. A patient seen in the ER, and a culture insensitivity is run, but the results of that culture insensitivity won't be available for 72 hours. So the physician prescribes an antibiotic. A couple of days later, the patient returns to the ER still very sick. A duplicate record is created, and the physician treating the patient doesn't have access to the culture and sensitivity result, and therefore prescribes yet a different antibiotic that is still not the correct one for what the patient has. So that's an example of fairly common scenario that happens today in many, many ERs across the country. A second example is TESA repeated. And the most common example we found in a study that we did of 1,000 real duplicate records was repeat chest x-rays. This happened to be in a pediatric organization, so the repeat chest x-ray was even more dangerous because little kids getting exposed to radiation cause the more radiation that they need, and they're still growing, and there can be further problems just associated with excess radiation. And certainly with ACOs coming into being, there could definitely and will definitely be a financial impact to the provider when tests are repeated. Another common problem with a duplicate medical record is delays in treatment. And this tends to be a very common problem, again, in emergency rooms. So with the example that I gave above, when this type of a scenario happens and the patient is stating that they had just been there, so the ER staff and the lab spend time trying to find the patient's previous medical record, which has their initial culture and sensitivity ordered and therefore maybe even the results of it by that point in time. That's the second most common scenario that we saw in our cost study. And again, in the ACO model, that is going to cause the provider to experience higher costs to treat this patient. And it decreases available staff and resources to treat other patients. So it's definitely a huge cost factor, particularly in the ACO model. And lastly, I think overlaid records they cause a huge patient safety risk as you're treating one patient with another person's record. Quality care problems that this could create are numerous, and they're extremely dangerous.
Okay, great. I heard you mention pediatric patients, Beth, when you were answering that question, and I had the opportunity to read the white paper that you wrote with Karen Proffitt for the Healthcare Financial Management Association. And in that white paper it's entitled, Do You Know Who's in Your EHR? And it covers overlays and a little bit about duplicate medical records. But you use an example here in the white paper that talks about two twins and one of the twins care at a hospital in Denver. Can you explain to us why overlays and duplicate medical records are particularly troublesome for children's hospitals?
Sure. I think there's a higher risk for both duplicates and overlays to be created in pediatric hospitals. And primarily, it's because the children, they don't speak for themselves. So they have fathers or grandparents or aunts and uncles or neighbors even bringing them in for care. And the adult bringing them in may not remember or may not even know some of the accurate demographic data, such as the date of birth of the patient. And so we see higher levels of erroneous data in pediatric databases because of that. They don't have identification, so they don't have a driver's license, obviously. And so there's no form of legal documentation to say, here's how you spell this child's last name, or here is the correct date of birth for that patient. And I think because they can't speak for themselves, they're just at higher risk of adverse medications and duplicate diagnostic tests to occur. And so it's they just have a higher risk of that. Another really critical factor is that a lot of pediatric patients, they may have Social Security numbers assigned to them, but frequently the parents don't bring the child's Social Security number with them to the hospital. So there's a lack of a unique numeric identifier on pediatric patients. And it just makes it more challenging to get the identity correct.
I also noticed in the article that you wrote that incorrect dates of birth are 10% more likely to occur on pediatric records than on adult records, which goes along with you saying that oftentimes the caregiver or perhaps if it's another adult that's bringing them in might not know the accurate date of birth, which may create problems.
That's correct.
Great information. Thank you for sharing that. I want to talk to you, Beth, a little bit about reconciling duplicates and overlays in terms of the industry estimates with real-world results. And I want to start off by actually reading you something from an article that was published last year in Executive Insight, just to give you an example. In an article last year published on Executive Insight called What You Don't Know Can't Hurt You about duplicate medical records and overlays in healthcare, I'm going to read a quote here from the article. It says, consider these statistics. The standard target rate for master patient index duplication is below 5%, with a target for best practices at about 2%. Yet hospitals typically average an 8 to 12% duplicate rate. So an average hospital with about 500,000 patient records can expect up to 40,000 to 60,000 of those records potentially to be compromised. Beth, the American Health Information Management Association reports that the average duplicate medical record rate is between 8 and 12%. What is the latest data on real-world duplicates and overlays? In other words, what percentages are you seeing?
Well, what percent we're seeing is dependent on how it's measured. So is it historical, static database of a million records, and how do you actually compute that duplicate rate? I think, though, in general, we are seeing rates actually higher than what they have been historically. And my assumption, because we've studied it across large databases and small databases, is that the typical scenario is the larger the database, the higher rate of duplication in that database, mm-hmm. and the higher rate of overlaid records in that database. And it's because in integrated delivery networks and what's happening obviously in the industry today is that these large integrated delivery networks are buying up clinics and critical access hospitals, and they're going across state borders, and where they're like here in Denver, we have a large organization that has hospitals in Montana and Kansas and California, and they're acquiring clinics right and left, and they all have one large enterprise master patient index. So that database every year is growing by 30, 40, 50% because of these acquisitions. So they're dumping data into an existing database. Their facilities here in Denver tend to be the tertiary care facility that these smaller facilities in Kansas and even Montana are sending their patients to for the more complex care. So there's really the same patient that might be from Kansas and Colorado, and they're in that same database, and they might have been treated both in Denver and in Kansas. So there's a lot of overlapping records. There's a lot of duplicate records because of the integration of all of these disparate facilities now into one large database. So the bigger the database, typically the higher rate of duplication and overlays. I think that the overlay rate we're actually starting to see being increased in these types of organizations because they've got a registration clerk or a scheduling clerk in a clinic in, you know, a small facility in western Kansas, and they see a name of a patient that might be a patient that lives in eastern Colorado, and so they just think it's the same patient and they grab it, and it's really not the correct patient. So we're getting reports of higher and higher incidence of overlays occurring in these larger data sets.
That's interesting, because as a healthcare IT firm, we have a lot of correspondence with hospitals, and a lot of them say that their duplicate rate is in the 1 to 2% range, and we've always wondered how we can reconcile that with these averages that we're seeing 5 to 10%, 8 to 12% in the studies that we read. Where do the researchers get their data to back up the higher averages, or is that just is that basically just objective? They do their own research, or is there a disconnect between what hospitals are reporting and what we're actually seeing in these studies?
Sure. It basically corresponds to what are each of them measuring. So when you see publications of duplicate rates by organizations or researchers, it's mostly based on that those data sets have been analyzed by sophisticated identity algorithms, programs, that are looking for multiple discrepancies, not simply an exact match of the key demographic data on record A and record B, which almost any system can catch because it's a simple exact match comparison. But these researchers are using much more sophisticated error-tolerant types of algorithms to scrub that database. And then the cleanup is based on that scrubbing, so you get the actual true duplicate rate that existed in that particular database. When you have that type of an analysis done, you're finding a lot of discrepancies that the more simplistic or basic algorithms that are in most HIS, most hospital registration, clinic registration systems, those products have fairly simple, typically fairly simple rules that they use to try to find duplicates. So when the HIM department or the provider organization says we only have 1 to 2%, it's because their report is only looking for things like an exact first name, an exact date of birth, an exact social security number, and that compromises a very, typically only 20 to 30% of the real duplicates that that organization is probably creating on a daily basis. And we see it all the time.
Interesting. So it's very possible then that the strength of the algorithm, the underlying algorithm that looks for instances of duplicate medical records and overlays, may not be truly reporting what the actual number is.
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct. I mean, an example is something like a misspelled last name, or a common date of birth thing is that one record's got July 11th with a year of birth, and the next record's got November 7th.
Okay.
So a lot of hospital registration products can't catch that type of a discrepancy. So that duplicate that got created goes unreported.
I see. So then the answer to a hospital that claims to have a duplicate rate as low as 1% to 2% without having any type of an enterprise master patient index in place or perhaps a biometric identification, patient identification solution, would be that they could possibly not have a strong enough underlying algorithm or the proper technology to assess what the actual overlay and duplicate rate really is.
Correct.
Okay. So I was very curious about that question. Thanks for the feedback on that. Let's move forward and talk a little bit about the effect of overlays and duplicates on revenue streams and costs. My question for you, Beth, is what impact do overlays and duplicates have on a hospital, not only from a cost basis to correct per instance, but more importantly, on the revenue stream and the billing cycle? And can you give us some examples of the impact on revenue streams?
Sure. I'm going to break this down into kind of fee-for-service model.
Okay.
Revenue cycle versus an ACO model. So in a fee-for-service, which still a lot of providers are reimbursed on today, the revenue stream impacts tend to be centered around delays in issuing the bill due to patient demographic data integrity problems. There could be rejections from the payer because the address wasn't correct on the record, or the name was misspelled, or the date of birth is wrong, versus what the payer has on record for that patient. So they reject the bill, and then the provider has to correct the data and resubmit. So they end up, their payment gets delayed. They can miss compliance with the 72-hour rule, so they could end up with two different bills that go out, and with Medicare and Medicaid, that is a potential fraud type of scenario. And so they're missing the opportunity to collapse those bills into one bill and submit to the payer that way. And I think another very common scenario, which is this is just a missed opportunity, and that is to obtain more information on a returning patient that where that patient has a bad debt from previous services. That, again, in our cost study that we did, that was a pretty high rate of patients that had bad debt and ended up with a duplicate medical record number. And so the provider just misses the opportunity to either collect money or at least get updated information from the patient and to be able to collect on that previous bad debt. So those tend to be what the revenue cycle implications are on the fee-for-service. Mm-hmm. On the ACO model scenario, there's going to be a much larger revenue cycle impact because now the provider groups are at risk. So it's going to be in the provider's that financial best interest to be able to say that these three records, these three visits, all go to the same patient. And to be able to not only trend the data for one patient longitudinally so they can see what types of care that patient received and then what types of care they subsequently received and whether or not those subsequent care provisions were appropriate, they won't be able to accurately assess quality and effectiveness of the service that they provide if they can't link all the records for one patient across the entire data set. And they also will have an inaccurate view of specific providers' quality and efficiency because they, again, can't connect the patient. So being able to connect that patient across all types of care being provided to that patient is paramount for them to manage not only their quality and patient safety risk, but also their financial.
Okay. It would seem to me that with the increased competition that we see in healthcare, because I oftentimes talk to people in healthcare IT and in the healthcare field who mention to me how the competition is increasing every year to get patients, but not only get patients, but keep them for their life. I would think that this is probably duplicates and overlays are more under the microscope than ever, just because of the impact that they can have on revenue streams and the billing cycle. So thank you for that information.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to shift gears for a second and talk about health information exchanges. And I think broadly across the industry, we realize that the health information exchange's ability to improve patient care across disparate care settings, or even in electronic health records, ability to combine all patient records to enhance patient care across a large enterprise is directly proportional to the accuracy of the patient information exchanged. With that in mind, and the emergence of health information exchanges across the industry landscape, what are the potential implications of overlays and duplicate medical records on data integrity and the ability of these entities, meaning health information exchanges, to be successful in raising the quality of patient care and lowering overall costs?
Sure. It's a great question. And as I mentioned earlier, the larger the data set, typically, the higher the duplicate and overlay rate. That's just a very, very common pattern, unless that organization is actually aggressively managing the data and managing the integrity and quality of the data. So as these, obviously in an HIE, the database is going to get larger and exponentially larger pretty quickly the more providers that join that health information exchange. And I think part of the scary part to me is that very, very few HIEs in this country have any staff dedicated to assessing or managing the quality of the data coming in, including the patient identity. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, the patient identity is one of the easier things to be able to manage because there are long-standing methods out there to do that. But they just don't have the staff. When they founded their HIE, it never even dawned on them that they might need staff, just as large provider organizations have staff to do this data management, and they just don't. So they might have data governance policies. A lot of them don't even have the level of data governance policies that I think they should have. But even the ones that do have them, they have no way to enforce them because there's nobody looking at the data. So that's a huge challenge. I think a second problem that we're seeing in several HIEs that we've worked with is that the product that they use for the exchange of the information, receiving the data from all the providers, storing it, and then possibly pushing it out to the various providers, a lot of those products out on the marketplace today don't have really strong record matching algorithms in them. And you have to have that because you're going to have a lot of overlap of patients going to multiple different providers and hospitals and physicians and labs and everything. So the likelihood that you're going to have two different John Smiths or one John Smith that's being seen in two different locations all now coming into the HIE is pretty high. So we actually had one HIE customer that came to us because the providers using their HIE database began to complain that there was incorrect linking, and their major complaint was overlays.
Hmm.
So there's I think in a lot of the HIEs, because so many of them are not terribly mature, they've been, in business, maybe 3, 4, 5 years, and a lot of them younger than that, and they start with data just pumping into their HIE and then pushing it to the provider. So the provider doesn't notice necessarily a duplicate, because they're still getting the transaction because they're the physician of record in that particular lab result, for instance. But when they start to go searching now they want to search the HIE and pull data across from another provider, now that's when they start to notice the duplicates. Overlay, they catch fairly quickly because they bring up their result and they go, that's not my patient. So, again, I think we're starting to get more complaints from HIEs on the overlay. I suspect duplicate rates in a lot of these HIE databases are well up in the 20, 30, 40%.
Wow.
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Interesting.
So, I mean, obviously, both of those duplicates and overlays, they diminish the HIE's ability to help raise the quality of care on population. And so, therefore, that decreases their value.
Right.
It decreases the incentive of providers to want to join if they're going to get inaccurate information back.
It almost defeats the purpose of having the health information exchange in the first place.
Sure, it does. And especially when you have that higher rate.
Mm-hmm. That's great information. Thank you, Beth. I want to talk for just a second about the amount of time and resources that are needed to correct overlays within an EHR, an electronic health record system. Can you give us an example of the amount of time and resources that are needed to fix these problems? And beyond that, what additional steps besides cleaning the database are needed?
Okay, so let's separate this into an overlay versus duplicate discussion, duplicate record situation. So when a duplicate occurs, depending on what product they have, most registration systems in the ambulatory or in the hospital provider side have some ability to correct a duplicate record fairly easily. It might take 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, but they tend to not be terribly complicated because a lot of the applications now have a utility that allows them to simply merge a patient record once you validate it really is the same person. Overlays, on the other hand, are extremely time-consuming to correct, and it can take an hour to correct one. It could take days, weeks, or months to correct one. And it just depends on the system they have, what EMR system they have, and how easy it is to peel that record apart. And there are some products that have some utilities that help facilitate that, but another major factor is how long has that overlay been sitting in their database. If it's been in there for a long time and there's been subsequent care provided, it can take a very, very long time to peel that record apart. We saw one, and I think it's the article that you quoted earlier about that Karen Proffitt and I did for HFMA, they had one record that took them over 90 days to peel it apart just because they had to involve so many different providers because it was an inpatient stay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fairly long inpatient stay. And so they had to get every single provider to say, okay, you ended up documenting on the wrong patient, not your fault, was the registration person selected the wrong record and the wrong person. And so that patient was treated on their sibling's record. But they have to go through note by note, result by result. And if it's a physician, a nurse, or any kind of therapist, anybody who is documenting notes or vitals or any of those types of medications, they have to get that provider, that specific provider, to now go into the correct record and document it. There's no way to move it to the correct record. So, again, it depends on what system you have. And so not only did that cost that facility just hours and hours and hours and hours of work from very expensive providers. It also, they missed their Medicaid billing timeline, and so they lost $42,000 of revenue just because they couldn't file the claim in time.
Which I'm sure didn't make their chief financial officer or their CEO too happy on that.
No. No.
And you mentioned overlays being such complex problem to fix, and the example that you gave obviously is extreme and insofar as taking 90 days to fix one overlay, but I think it does illustrate the problem or the complication, I should say, that overlays have over duplicate medical records and just how important this particular topic is in healthcare IT to correct and to fix to make sure that data integrity is there where it needs to be. So that's great information. I want to talk, and you actually alluded to a little bit earlier about some of the technologies that are used to eliminate duplicates and overlays. What technologies today are predominantly used to eliminate duplicates and overlays, and what other technologies do you feel can be a viable option to stop the issue from happening in the first place?
Well, I think what exists today fairly commonly across the provider organizations to varying degrees of effectiveness is there are certainly record search algorithms that are in place in most scheduling and registration systems, again, to different levels of effectiveness. So the more sophisticated of a record search algorithm the organization uses in their registration and scheduling system, typically the less problems they have in creating overlays and duplicates. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of variables with that. Technology is just a piece of the solution, right? So the algorithm is important, but it's also the training of the users and to make sure that they understand how that the record search function works and what types of results they might get and how to effectively validate that the patient that they're registering is really the one whose record they selected. So there's people, process, plus technology. And again, organizations do that to varying levels of, with varying levels of success and effectiveness. The challenge that most organizations have that have less sophisticated record search algorithms is that they end up typically creating more duplicates, typically creating more overlays, and there's not a high degree of value organizationally in spending the money and resources on the technology, on an improved technology, and on the training and the feedback and the quality loop process in order to get this issue resolved. Because I still think there's not a great awareness in the industry of truly how complicated this is and this can be. So that's kind of what happens today. I think there are some organizations, and you know this better than I do, that are using biometrics. And biometrics could aid tremendously in faster registrations as well as significantly more accurate registrations. And the sooner healthcare adopts this type of technology in a more broad scale, the quicker we're going to get a return on investment with it. Because, as you know, you got to populate the database with the biometric signal to begin with in order for it to be used for subsequent registrations. So I know it can aid tremendously. I've had clients that have adopted it that have seen decreases in their error rates as well as quicker registration for the patient. So it's a patient satisfaction issue also.
That's a great point. Of course, we've seen as a biometrics research and development company and concentrating on biometric identification solutions, we have seen a tremendous increase in the demand for our technology across hospitals and as well as health information exchanges. So a couple of things that I heard that you said in there is that It's a training issue that the registrars, the patient access coordinators, they need to be held accountable for what they're doing on the front end and shown examples of what's happening on the back end as a result of errors and mistakes. Have you seen any examples or spoke with anybody who has instituted a program at their medical center or hospital that where they've actually brought firsthand cases, live examples, real examples to registrars of mistakes that have been made on the front end and how they've affected either patient care or perhaps, as we talked about earlier, the revenue stream and how that was affected. Have you heard of any of that?
Yes, I mean, I think the organization that we did that cost study at, and that was several years ago, what they did was soup to nuts. They did everything. They did installed a system that had a better record search algorithm. They checked demographics, 20 points of demographics on every single registration, and they did that for revenue cycle because they wanted that bill to go out accurately the first time, and they saw just by doing that, they saw a decrease in their AR days. They did a lot of training and of the registration scheduling staff. They researched what was causing them to make duplicates or overlays, and they provided that feedback to the patient access management every single month. And when you know, throughout, and they monitored it. They had a team that monitored the creation of data integrity errors, quantified it, and gave the feedback back to the patient access management. And they went from creating well over 6, 7, 8% duplicates, where they had 5 people in HIM managing a hotline when people were calling in. And they got down to and maintained for over 5 years, and I haven't talked to them recently, so I'm not sure what it is now, but for over 5 years, their duplicate creation rate was 0.2%. And they maintained that for that long of a period, and so they ended up having one person in HIM that spent less than half of her time correcting errors. So the return on investment was pretty significant. They paid for all the investment that they made in getting all these programs built and managed, and they paid for it in less than a year because they dropped their duplicate rate that quickly. And their physicians stopped complaining.
Which is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually leads me to the question of the priority for hospitals with so much data transformation currently in health information technology. What priority are hospitals placing on addressing the issues of duplicates and overlays, in your opinion?
So I think there's greater awareness at the executive level that the problem of duplicates and overlays even exists. And that really does happen in their facility, because I think a lot of organizations, when you talk with them, and especially I've been in this business for many, many years, and even 8, 10 years ago, it was very difficult to get an executive to listen to duplicate records.
Mm-hmm.
And to get any kind of executive buy-in to correcting the issues that the organization has. So I think there's greater awareness. We're certainly seeing a much higher priority on MPI data cleanups, but I really think that that's driven because of a lot of EMR, electronic medical record vendors, require that the organization putting in their EMR have to report less than X percent duplicate rate in their database before the vendor will allow them to go live. And so obviously meaningful use, you know, high tech has spurned rapid adoption of EMR. So I think there's a correlation with that. I'm still not seeing a lot of executive tension on overlaid records, and I think it's because even though we see them increasing. I was just talking to one of my customers at, you know, large organization, multi-facility, and they've had a data team in place for 5 years, and they're pretty aggressive in managing their data. And the gentleman that manages it said, we are now seeing 2 to 3 overlays a week. And so in percentage, it's still minuscule. So until something bad happens, it's really hard to get executives to say, okay, well, so what? You got 3 overlays that you have to fix every week. They don't get the connection. So unfortunately, some major patient care problem is going to happen before a lot of those executives will listen to the issue. The other thing that's hard with overlays is that unless most overlay reporting is fairly anecdotal, so it's Dr. Smith or Nurse Mary that calls down to HIM and says, we seem to have 2 different patients in this record. And because there's no mechanism or the process is not in place to monitor significant demographic changes on a record that might indicate that record was overlaid. So the technology and or processes is not in place to even catch them. So it's very anecdotal how organizations get their overlays reported. So anyway, obviously, again, as databases grow, the problem's going to get more rampant, and as HIEs are out there longer, the problem's going to become more rampant. So I see nothing but demand for services and technology that can help support patient identity accuracy.
Yeah, a lot of what you said parallels what we hear here at our company. And one of the interesting things, just to dovetail on what you said, was that what we're finding out by talking to CIOs, by talking to directors of IT, by talking to patient access managers, is that a lot of them do realize the importance of stopping and preventing duplicates and overlays, and they're taking proactive steps to incorporate technology. You spoke earlier about biometrics as an example for patient identification. They're proactively looking at these types of technologies because once they do an MPI cleanup, they don't want to be back doing that same thing the next year. And so that's one of the reasons we've seen such a spike in the demand or an increase in the demand for our technology in particular. But also we've been reading about other technologies too, smart cards and probabilistic matching algorithms. And it really is encouraging to see that they are taking these proactive steps instead of being reactive to the problem. So
right.
Just to add on to what you were saying there. And actually, I wanted to throw one question out to you that I asked Sharon Canner, and after hearing what you had said in response to a lot of the questions I had for you today, I'm particularly interested in getting your opinion on this, but it has to do with the National Patient Identifier. And as you know, as we kind of push towards establishing Stage 2 meaningful use and its intensification amongst healthcare providers, there's been a lot of discussion of establishing a National Patient Identifier, and it's really growing stronger, especially in the context of sharing patient data across disparate health information exchanges. In your opinion, what are the pros and cons, do you think, of establishing a National Patient Identifier?
Well, I may not be the best person to ask because I've been a proponent of it for a long time.
Oh, okay.
And I think that healthcare is very different than we're always getting compared to, well, the banking industry figured this out. And it's like, well, yeah, but try to go open a bank account without your Social Security number.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have that requirement. You can't force a patient to give it. So we have no unique identifier. And when you see the, again, in databases, as they get bigger, to see the number of Jose Rodriguez's in one database, there could be thousands. And so the likelihood that there's going to be 2 or 3 of them that have the same birthday is pretty high. And so then what do? They got the same gender, same first name, first last name. You know, maybe one record's got, just because the address is different, guy could have moved. So, I mean, I think that the problem is getting magnified, and certainly, you know, I served on a task force for HIMSS. Gosh, it's been like 4 years ago now, and we created a white paper on patient identity. So there's, you know, the good news is there's getting to be a lot more national attention to the importance of the accuracy of patient identity, and I think there's getting to be industry-wide recognition that this is a little harder than we thought it was. Mm-hmm. So I think without a unique patient identifier, I think it's going to be pretty darn hard. And certainly not cost effective to do the level of data exchange that is truly necessary in the society that we live in, with patients taking more control of their healthcare and picking their providers and being more demanding of getting good service from their providers and switching if they don't feel like they're getting good care. I just don't know how we're ultimately gonna tackle this. Now, in saying that, I don't think a national patient identifier is gonna solve the entire problem. Because there's always going to be fraud, there's always going to be theft, there's always going to be that person is still new to that provider, and so they might not have their national provider ID with them, just like moms who bring their kids into the ER at pediatric hospitals don't have their kids' social security number. So there's always going to be challenges. It just, I think it would be a major mitigating factor if we could actually do that. Privacy advocates don't like it. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, the tighter you can control that type of issuance and, you know, maybe make it voluntary, whatever. I just think there's a lot of ways to do it that can still protect the patient's privacy and probably even tighten up the security.
Thanks for the feedback on that, Beth. I appreciate it. It's very similar to a lot of the arguments that we've been reading in favor of establishing a national patient identifier. I mean, there's a risk reward involved in any decision like this, but I think when you're talking about matters of life and death, especially in the context of what we discussed today with some of the problems that are born of not having an identifier, something that, like a social security number, it really highlights some of the additional problems that can be created. So I really appreciate your feedback on that.
Mm-hmm.
We've been speaking with Beth Henke-Just, President and CEO of Just Associates, and this is our continuing podcast series from M2SYS Healthcare Solutions on different topics in healthcare IT, including duplicate medical records, overlays, medical identity theft, health information exchanges. And Beth, I just want to say how much I appreciate you lending your time to us today. Your insight was fantastic and really learned a lot from the information that you gave. So thanks for being our guest.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.